You're listening to Legends of the Dark Knight, only on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Welcome to Legends of the Dark Knight. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips. Joining me in this trip to Gotham City is...
TF Joan Mike, hello.
Hello. And yes, Batgirl is off helping Nightwing in another city, so... For the night.
She went somewhere, I don't know.
So, what's up?
Oh, nothing. Same shit, different week.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that to some extent. recorded a few new things, haven't edited some things, did our meeting last week, tweaking stuff on the site slowly. Other than that, just ready for another episode of Legends.
Yep. So I think we should just get right to it.
Alrighty then, back with the first episode after this.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Another nightmare? You've been having a lot of those lately. Is there something you want to tell me? Then lie down. Go back to sleep.
I need some air.
Now what?
Nothing. Go back to sleep.
Thank you.
First up is Terror in the Sky. It's a dark winter night in Gotham, and a couple dock workers are suddenly assaulted by a giant bat creature that is very interested in the fruit that they are loading. After gorging itself on some choice pieces, it takes off into the skies and returns home. Dr. Kirk Langstrom awakens in a panic, disturbed by his nightmares. His wife, Francine, asks him what is wrong when he says, nothing. However, when he heads for the window, he finds the remains of some of the fruit the man-bat had eaten along with some rather large claw marks on the carpet.
Yeah, it's his wife. Episode over. That's it. There's nothing to this episode for me whatsoever. I mean, if he couldn't figure that shit out right away...
Well, I can see to some extent he may not have known that it wasn't him transforming because he didn't exactly have his wits about him when he did transform.
But he said in the other in the original episode that he wasn't going to be doing that anymore. He had no inclination of becoming Man-Bat ever again because of what it did to himself and to other people and to his marriage. So we can supposedly assume that he had no intentions of becoming Man-Bat ever again. And if it's not him and it's coming into his window and not, I mean, it's kind of like, somebody who's committed a murder from the inside out and not the outside in, it's one of those things where it's, oh God, I just didn't care for this episode whatsoever.
I could kind of see, it was very obvious, but if it wasn't him, then it had to be her. But
yeah,
you go the entire episode thinking it's probably him, only to discover that it's not. And then once you figure that out, it's fairly obvious.
Yes, fairly obvious.
I'm not happy to see the Man-Bat thing or Wo-Man-Bat return.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad to some extent as the first one, but I'm glad that they never visit this again.
Yeah.
And yes, he could have, despite saying, yes, I'll never do that, a lot of the villains have said that too and gone right back to their, you never truly know.
Yeah, but again, as we've said so far in 10 episodes of LOTDK, there are certain villains and certain one-off characters that, this isn't a Joker episode. This isn't a Penguin episode. This isn't a big Bat Gallery Rogue episode at all. It's a guy who transformed himself into a bat and, he was supposed to be reformed. And it's not like he went to Arkham, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? So
no, he just got reprimanded and
yeah,
Batman
slap on the wrist and have a happy marriage and whatever else.
But yeah, it wasn't entirely too bad, but I'm not a fan, but I guess we should get into the trivia bits.
Yes.
Rather than continually dwelling on this episode.
As far as continuity, obviously, as I said, it continues from On Leather Wings. Also, Dr. Milo mentions having Dr. Langstrom's notes in Justice League Unlimited episode, The Doomsday Sanction. This indicates that while Dr. March's notes were destroyed, Langstrom's were not. And again, as I've said, this, it's all Dr. Langstrom's research fault of, splicing in Batman Beyond and the stuff with Doomsday and JLU. So, there's your continuity bits.
Yeah. As for the trivia, though, as the Man-Bat, Francine demonstrates several new abilities that indicate the increased potency of March's new serum, including echolocation and, unlike Kirk, no memory of having transformed. The woman bat's interest in the fruit indicates that the bat DNA used in Dr. March's serum is from a fruit bat, unlike the serum used by Dr. Cuvier on Terry McGinnis in Batman Beyond Splicers, which was from a vampire bat.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I guess they did kind of go back to the bat thing later.
Yes.
Except Batman got it.
Yep.
I forgot about that.
He did, yep.
Oh, man.
But see...
But it was done well on the other one,
yes.
So
I
can't complain.
In Splicers and Batman Beyond, it was done better than, hey, here's a husband and wife team that become man and woman bats. Yeah.
Wow. But, yes, I think that pretty much sums up this episode. What do you think?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
Really.
So with that, we'll be moving on.
I want a nice, clean game, gentlemen.
That'll be a first. So, I hear you know who nailed the Mad Hatter last week.
No kidding. He sure gets around for one guy.
Yeah, well, that's where you're wrong. I don't think it is one guy.
Huh?
Well, I figure it. Gordon's got a bunch of them stashed someplace like a SWAT team. He wants you to think it's one guy, but...
Yeah, you're always seeing double.
It's obvious our Cape friend suffered some crime-related trauma when he was younger. Perhaps an over-anxious mugger blew off a piece of his face.
Sure, he could be all gross and disgusting under that mask. No offense, Harv.
Just deal.
Well, you know what I think.
Not the robot theory again.
Well, he could be.
Hello, boys. Get me an herbal tea and deal me in.
Scram, lady. This is a private... Why, you little...
Poison Ivy.
It's been a long time, Harvey. You're still looking halfway decent.
Half of me wants to strangle you.
And what does the other half want?
To hit you with a truck.
We used to date.
Ah. What brings such a dainty dove to this dismal den?
Running from the law. And the Batman, too, of course.
Of course.
Likewise.
You got it.
Same here. You'd think one of us would have got him by now.
I've come the closest.
Are you kidding? I was the one who nearly...
Nobody's come closer to snuffing the Batman than me.
In your
get out of my face.
The fact of the matter is we each have an almost gotten Batman story. I know mine's the best, but let's hear yours anyway. I'd say ladies first, but since we don't have any, we'll start with you, Pam.
All right.
Up next is Almost Gotham. While hiding out from the police, the Joker, the Penguin, Two-Face, Poison Ivy, and Killer Croc gather at the Criminal Only's stacked deck to play cards and swap stories about their mutual nemesis. Each one has had an almost got-em story when it comes to trying to do in Batman. I should probably go through each of these stories since they are, and we're probably going to have to go through each of them and discuss each of them since they are so intricate. I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that.
To discuss each one, I mean, that's kind of what we're going to have to do. So, starting off with Poison Ivy's story. Poison Ivy placed poison ivy gas inside pumpkins on Halloween, which went off when lit. When most of Gotham City started to feel the effects of the gas, Batman went into the city pumpkin patch to investigate. There, Ivy attacked Batman with the gas, successfully weakened him, and almost unmasked him. However, Batman programmed the Batmobile to run down Ivy, later pulled a breath mask from the vehicle. He subsequently captured Ivy. First of all, that's such a Halloween story if I ever heard one.
And it was very, very quick. I was like, she's like, I almost got him. And it's like, no, you weren't even really that close.
No, not at all.
It was kind of sad, really. She's like, I almost got him. And it's like, no, you didn't.
Yes. I thought it was kind of cool, that story, though, because I love the dynamic of all of these villains getting together. Because you've got the sexual tension between Poison Ivy and Two-Face. I thought that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah, and then she's like, we used to date. And they're like, yeah.
As far as Two-Face's story goes, Two-Face staged a robbery on the Gotham Mint for $2 million in $2 bills. I wonder if he has a cliche there. Batman, in an attempt to stop the heist, was overpowered by Two-Face's henchmen, the Two-Ton Gang.
Staying true to his personality disorder, Two-Face flipped his coin to see whether he would kill Batman or let him live. With a negative bad heads result, Batman lunged at him ineffectively, but was restrained by his henchmen, and Two-Face took Batman's utility belt, strapped him to a giant penny, and placed it on a catapult. The coin lands face down, you'll be squashed flat. It lands face up. If it lands face up, I'll just break every bone in your body. In midair, Batman cut himself free of the ropes using Two-Face's own coin, which he had managed to steal, and apprehend the crooks. In return for his apprehending Two-Face, and much to Two-Face's irritation, the Gotham Mint let Batman keep the giant penny.
That would explain why it's still in his Batcave in Batman Beyond.
Yes.
I never really caught where that came from, and it makes sense after rewatching this episode again.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad that they let him keep it. That's just kind of like, penny for your thoughts, sir? Yes, I have one giant penny. I don't know, but
it's such a funny story because of the outcome and letting him keep the giant penny. And I always thought that was that was an interesting way to further play on Two-Face's gimmick of the flip coin. I mean, why didn't he think of this in the first place? Of course, Batman's going to get out of it, but I mean, seriously, I mean, strap him to a giant penny and flip him for it. So, Killer Croc, who is essentially the red herring in this episode, Killer Croc threw a rock at Batman in a quarry. The other villains stare at him for a moment and continue telling their stories, while Croc mutters, "It was a really big rock."
I think that was hilarious what Batman did there. Oh, I'm sorry for spoiling that.
The thing here is I don't. Okay, the way that this the way that Almost Got Him is has opened and is portrayed is, I don't know when Batman caught Croc and replaced himself as Croc. I mean, obviously telling the story, yes, that, I mean, Croc isn't that smart, so I guess that could be his story.
But I take it that at some point when Croc got up from the table and went to the back and there were guys getting thrown around,
yeah,
I'm assuming that that's
I assume that's when it happened too, but...
Because the cops do surround the place at the very end, so obviously they captured him outside.
Yeah.
And then Batman came in dressed as Croc. Which is, to me, hilarious.
Yes, it is.
But the Penguin story, the Penguin turned a zoo aviary into a home for dangerous birds in a plot to kill Batman. Pretending to attempt a break-in in the aviary caught Batman's attention. The Penguin sprayed Batman with a red gas out of his infamous umbrella gun. Acting as though spray were harmless, Penguin ran into the aviary, but then announced over a loudspeaker that in fact the red gas was a nectar eaten by poison-beaked hummingbirds, which were released to attack the Dark Knight. After being bitten several times, Batman threw a batarang at the sprinkler where the water slowed down the small birds. Before he could inject himself with an antidote, he was attacked and viciously gashed by a cassowary.
A giant bird, essentially.
Yes, a big, mean-ass bird. In desperation, Batman stabbed the flightless bird with one of the hummingbirds, incapacitating it. Batman chased after the Penguin outside, but the villain escaped, flying away via his umbrella.
Oh my god. This story was so funny because he kept calling it his Aviary of Doom.
and infamous, he was making emphasis on Doom.
Yes.
I did like how this played out, though. And then he took off his cape to kind of, take down some of the stuff. And it was really nice. I don't particularly care for most of the Penguin stories, but this particular one was actually good to me.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Short and sweet is kind of the Penguin's way. That was probably one of my favorite stories told today.
Yeah, I mean, and see, this is a way, and I know we'll probably mention this later, but this episode of BTAS is a way of fitting in multi-stories without having a multi-part episode.
Yeah, and it's very nicely done, and I think it's interesting how they fit this whole thing into one 22-minute episode.
Exactly.
I mean, Ivy's was real quick. Croc, obviously, was super quick.
Yeah.
Two-Faces was semi-quick. Penguin's was, you know, almost on par with that. However, getting to the best story, as Joker puts it, which I have to say was very true.
Yes.
The Joker story is, he and his gang took over and blocked off the set of a Gotham City late-night talk show. His gang holding the audience hostage, Batman went to save the people in the set, but was overpowered and strapped to a laugh-powered electric chair, which would fry him with electricity that rose in voltage the more the audience laughed. The Joker then took over the show as host, with the audience being forced to laugh at gunpoint. The Joker wanted more honest laughter and pumped the studio with laughing gas until these people would laugh at the phone book. He then had his assistant Harley Quinn read the names out of the phone book to elicit more laughter from the crowd. During this time, the Joker got so confident that he took out a sausage and began cooking it with the chair's steadily increasing electricity until Catwoman broke into the studio and attacked him. While being thrown back, he dropped the metal rod he was using to hold the sausage right on Batman's lap. To distract it at this point with Catwoman, nobody saw Batman use the rod to escape from the chair. Too late, as the Joker was already fleeing the studio. Catwoman, starting to gain on him, was knocked out from behind by Harley Quinn. Then, in order to prove there is more than one way to get Batman, he instructed Harley to take Catwoman to a cat food factory and strap her to a meat chopper.
Joker and Harley really like to strap people on, don't they?
Yeah, they like strap-ons. But anyways, the Joker himself decided to hide out at the stacked deck for a while to lose Batman. He explains to the other villains that he is getting ready to go meet Harley at the factory and turn Catwoman into cat food.
Oh, Lord.
I love that story.
It's so fucking funny because it's so ridiculous. It's like...
But it's something the Joker would do.
Oh, no, I know it is. But it's like, oh, my God. This is exactly why I almost got him. Not just the Joker story, even though I know Steve is going to say that that's his favorite because, you know, he's obsessed
with the Joker. No, this entire episode was...
But the entire episode is just so friggin' hilarious.
Thank you, Paul Dini.
Yes, thank you, Paul Dini.
It's many of the best stories for Batman.
Oh, yeah. With the finale, at this point, Killer Croc stands up saying, "I don't think so," with Batman's voice, and proceeds to throw the Joker across the room, revealing himself to be Batman in a Killer Croc suit. However, it would seem Batman sacrificed everything to get this information, as he finds himself alone in a bar confronted by his deadliest foes, all itching to get him in a perfect position to do so. Unfortunately for the villains, they in turn are confronted with multiple loaded guns as it is revealed that every other patron of the bar is a police officer, among them Harvey Bullock and Police Commissioner James Gordon. The whole thing was a sting operation. As the villains are arrested, Batman goes to the cat food factory to find Catwoman, bound, gagged, and strapped to a conveyor belt. Saves Catwoman from Harley Quinn. Okay, bound,
that just doesn't
gagged,
sound right.
And strapped. Okay, it's like...
I think Harley was doing something dirty there?
Yeah, it's a total S&M episode, I swear to God. Holy shit. Hey, if Catwoman or Harley got it on... Anyway, that's another podcast. The episode ends on a humorous note as Catwoman makes a pass at Batman and implores him to reveal his identity to her, only to turn and find he has pulled one of his trademark disappearing acts. She then smiles and shakes her head and mutters to herself, "Huh, almost got him."
This episode is so far past 10 out of... I mean, this is like a 20 out of 10. I mean, this is, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when people say, "Oh, I gave it 100%. No, this guy gave it 100. This episode exceeds all expectations. It's just so, so hilarious.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there wholeheartedly. This episode is one of my favorite. And in fact, I used to, as a kid, have, because they had those, like, bigger, kind of small, they were kind of like storybooks, but they were still picture books, but they were like a comic, but they were not...
The Choose Your Own Adventure books.
it wasn't a choose your own adventure. It was a, it's about the size of what your monitor viewing screen would be of a comic, and kind of like the rectangle. It's more of a square, and they had it like that. It was in a real, I don't know, it was a kiddish cover or whatever, but I had that as a kid, and that was my first exposure to this episode. And so seeing that, and then, you know, I mean, reading that and then seeing the episode, it just cements that for me.
Yeah. I'm going to go through a bunch of continuity bits here. Since Batman was acting as Croc the whole time, it is safe to say that the story is made up, but oddly fits a scene in Sideshow, an episode made aired later than this. It is possible that the event actually happened, and that Batman is telling it as Croc would. Two-Face tells Ivy that they let Batman keep the giant fanny, thus proving a new origin for the piece of memorabilia he keeps in the Batcave. Also, Ivy makes a reference to the group that she and Two-Face used to date while Harvey Dent was still in the district attorney office, an event that occurred in the episode Pretty Poison. Killer Croc proves to have a fascination with assaulting Batman with rocks, suggesting it is a punishment for Batman in the episode Trial. Assuming Killer Croc to have been Batman in disguise the entire episode, Batman portrays Croc as a stupid. This contradicts the previous Killer Croc episode, Vendetta, in which Croc is shown to be rather intelligent, enough so to work as a mob hitman and frame Harvey Bullock for murder.
This is the second episode to show Batman bleeding, following on Leather Wings.
Yep.
It is also odd that Catwoman, who can somehow get along with Harley and Gotham Girls, as Harley tries to kill Catwoman in this episode and makes a reference to mistreating a cat.
I had a kitty once, you know. They don't always land on their feet.
Well, wow. Now the thing about Gotham Girls is
it's completely different.
Well, it's completely different, but Gotham Girls is also it was one of those online short series. There was Gotham Girls and Lobo. Those were the two online short series.
Well, this lasted for three seasons.
Right. Well, right, but what I'm saying is it didn't air on television, I don't think. It was online.
The WB network.
Did it?
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing it on WB. Huh. But essentially, that series is a total lesbian fest. Essentially.
Wow.
It is.
Hey, you still have Commissioner Gordon on there.
Well, all right, you got... all right, who was it? Batgirl and... Was it Batgirl and Supergirl? I forget.
Zatanna.
But yeah, Batgirl and Zatanna, Catwoman and Harley. I mean, you add... if you add in Poison Ivy to that series, you could have had a fivesome. Anyway.
Wow. But care to take a couple shots at trivia?
Oh, God, yeah. Every time the viewers get to see Two-Face's hand, he always has two deuces and two face cards. A play on his name. In one shot, he also has four 2x2, and is seen putting half and half in his coffee. Ugh.
God.
Okay, that's taking the Two-Face gag a little bit too... it's kind of like when a joke goes too long in the tooth, really. It's like, good lord.
Nice.
The Joker's hand at the end is four aces and a joker. Every time we see his hand, he always has at least one ace. Due to cheating, he also cheats by looking at Harvey's Two-Face's hand.
Nice.
Oh, God.
The Joker cracks a joke at Poison Ivy about her use of exploding pumpkins. 2 years after this episode, Mark Hamill, who voices the Joker, would voice the Hobgoblin in the 1994 television series Spider-Man. Yes.
If we ever interview him, I have to so bring this piece of trivia up. It's so funny.
The Penguin's and the Joker's stories all happen recently, with the Penguin having freshly escaped from his crime a few weeks before and the Joker's being just the night before. He must have planned for this. Poison Ivy's story is set the previous Halloween, and Two-Face's story happened some undetermined time ago.
Yeah. The Two-Ton Gang's capture of Batman possibly represents the only time in the DCAU storyline that the Dark Knight has physically overpowered by a non-metahumans. Oh, boy.
Good boy.
Oh, boy. Okay. Two-Face's comment of half me wants to strangle her and the other half wanting to hit her with a truck indicates that killing Poison Ivy is the only thing both sides seem to agree on.
Nice. I love that line.
Oh, my God.
I love that line. That was so great. Getting to some of the quotes, though.
Yes.
I love this part. The Joker saying, "He sure gets around for one guy." Two-Face says, "Yeah, well, that's where you're wrong. I don't think it is one guy." Killer Croc goes, "Huh?" And Two-Face says, "The way I figure it, Gordon's got a bunch of them stashed someplace like a SWAT team. He wants you to think it's one guy, but..." And Joker says, "Ah, you're always seeing double."
The fact of the matter is, we each have an almost got'em Batman story. I know mine's the best, but let's hear all yours anyway. I'd say ladies first, but since we don't have any, we'll start with you, Pam.
I thought that was awesome.
Oh, God. Yes.
I always love their puns that go back and forth, like...
There's
Two-Face. If I hadn't been for this blast of corn, I would have got him. Joker says, "Gee, that's too bad, Harv, but I guess you'll always come in second. Anyone else want to go?"
You know, see, here's the thing. It's like, I know this would never work because, you know, cartoons aren't made for the fans. They're made for kids, whatever kids of whatever generation. But if you take all of the times that any of these criminals in BTAS were in Arkham and did I know this is going to sound really weird and a lot of people are going to hate me for doing this, and you may even hate me for doing this, but for those of Steve might not know about this, but the Looney Tunes show, which is currently airing on Cartoon Network, is a whole new take on the Looney Tunes as far as the main part of the show. It does have the Roadrunner Coyote shorts, which are essentially 3D versions of the old shorts. But it's essentially the same thing, but the actual overall story with Bugs, Daffy, and the rest of the gang is Bugs and Daffy are roommates, and the rest of the Looney Tunes are their neighbors in their community. Can you imagine if you set a show like that in Arkham and just followed the villains around and just hearing their escapades against each other in prison? That would be kind of think of it as a BTAS Shawshank Redemption.
Wow.
That would be so fucking awesome.
I think I just...
That would be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah.
But anything else?
No. This episode is by far the best, one of the best episodes out of the entire series. And it's just amazing. Just so
and suffice it to say that that's going to be the top one for the episode tonight. Following close second.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely.
So,
but yeah.
So with that, we'll be moving on.
Ah, Audubon, my personal favorite. Sorry about the intrusion, sir, but at least you've been ransacked by a man of impeccable taste.
Out of prison, and you're back to your old games, huh, Penguin?
You again and again and again!
So, today's the day, huh? Planning on making a big splash?
No need. They never forget the true elite.
Well, they got a lot to remember you by.
Ah, but this time I'll reclaim my perch in high society as an upstanding bird. I've learned my lesson.
Never again.
Come, the cream of society awaits. A limousine is no doubt at the ready.
Next up is Birds of a Feather. Oh boy. Penguin's up to his old tricks again, this time robbing a museum of its paintings, with him taking a particular interest in a picture of ducks on a lake. As usual, Penguin tries to keep a high-class image with his victims calling himself a man of impeccable taste. And also, like usual, Batman arrives to stop him, making mention that Penguin's best been out of jail for only 2 days. Penguin tries to escape, but Batman manages to catch him, and Penguin is jailed again.
Okay. Say it's been 2 days since almost got him. You're seriously telling me that he broke out of jail that fast?
No, he was released.
Oh, he was... Wait.
He didn't break out. They released him from jail.
What is wrong with you people in Gotham City?
Yes, it was a bunch of rich snobs that, you know... They released him, and Penguin insists that he has learned his lesson, and he's ready to rejoin elite society.
So this episode, instead of being called Birds of a Feather, should have been called Penguin's Reform.
Yeah, yeah, it basically should have. Although,
what a bump.
Yes, but I kind of feel bad for Cobblepot here, because he does kind of get, you know, shafted.
He does. I mean, you know...
He was actually trying for a minute there, and everybody just used him as a butt of a joke.
Yep.
So, I do feel bad for him here.
I do. I feel bad for him more in this episode than the entirety of Batman Returns.
In Batman Returns, I didn't feel bad for him. I wanted him to die in the first 10.
The only good thing about the Penguin in Batman Returns was the fucking duck. Hey, Megatron, don't you wish you had a rubber ducky that size?
Well, technically, I can hold on to him anyway.
Oh, God.
Think of the sewer as a really big bathtub.
This episode, it does have its moments where, you know, like you just said, where you feel sorry for Penguin, where, you know, I kind of think that Penguin and Veronica Reland kind of are, you know, because everybody makes fun of that chick. You know, they just do. You know, she can be a rich, snotty, spoiled little brat. But at the same time, she still has her own issues, just like Penguin has his own issues. So I guess they can almost be, in a weird way, kindred spirits. But overall, going in the episode order on the DVD, going from Almost Got Him to this, I was like, what?
Yeah, it's completely different personas for him. Like,
yeah.
You can clearly tell this is not a Dini episode. This guy clearly had no clue what the hell he was writing.
It
was a good story, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything above par anyway.
Well, see, the thing is like, you can't have
a jail episode and then have one where he's magically out and he's completely different.
Well, no, not even that. I mean, you can't have a Almost Got Him. Like if it would almost have made more sense if this in the air date order was the last episode of today, because while I like some of the other episodes that we're going to be talking about, going from starting at Terror in the Sky, going to Almost Got Him, and then going to Birds of a Feather, it's like you're setting up to be let down the rest of the reviews that you do. Because Almost Got Him was, it's for us, at least for me, it's on this pedestal like 1,000 feet in the air. And the rest of these episodes, I mean, What Is Reality is a good episode, which we'll get to. But, you know, going from Almost Got Him to this, it's like, ugh. Like,
I don't know. I just didn't like the transition. I do like some of the character development things with Veronica Vreeland and Penguin and all that, but just overall, I mean, like, Penguin really has, like okay, Two-Face has something to offer a challenge for Batman because it used to be his former friend. You know, Joker, obviously. But Penguin, at least in this episode, he's a common fucking criminal. That's it.
Yeah, and I also like the part that that Veronica Chick was trying to basically tout him around as her boyfriend just as a running gag.
Yeah.
And you feel bad for him because, you know, he's getting used something terrible. And Bruce, you know, catches wind of it and warns them not to use the Penguin like this, as he will most likely be unforgiving if he finds out. But Pierce dismisses this and tells Bruce that he is not their kind. It's like, okay, he's rich, but he's not an asshole.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
Yeah, this was a total rich kids episode use.
It was showing sympathy for the villain and yes. Kind of giving them a new, you know, a new leaf to turn over kind of thing. And Bruce actually does get concerned and feel sympathy for the Penguin.
Yeah, but overall, it was kind of like this is an episode I could watch again. I mean, this isn't as bad as, say, like a Tiger or Moon of the Wolf, but not by any means. But this, to me, essentially felt that you were putting... Even though there's tons of character development, you were essentially putting Penguin as a villain of the week. That's really all it was. And it was to introduce Veronica Vreeland. Nobody gives a shit about Veronica Vreeland. The hell was that?
That was my cat. She was like,
no!
God. She was like, she was agreeing with you. It was boring. It was bad that Veronica Vreeland, that was just a waste.
Yes.
That was not deserving of a episode for that character, but...
No, not at all.
So, anything else on this one?
No.
Yes, I'm in agreement. I think we should move on.
Yes.
Where does a 500-pound gorilla sleep? What is this, some kind of joke? Listen, you stupid machine, I want my money! Hey! Stupid machine, give me back my money! Hey, who's in there? Anybody in there?
Solidity Market! Fill or kill! Hit me 20,000.
The market's on fire!
We're taking a bath on that one.
What's with the bell? The market doesn't close for another 15 minutes. What's worse than a millipede with flat feet?
Good Lord! We've got a computer vandal on our hands.
Next up is, what is reality? On recent occasions, several Gotham City citizens have fallen victim to a mysterious computer hacker. What's more, a strange riddle is left at every scene. First, a late-night jogger tries to make a withdrawal from an ATM, only to have his account wiped clean. With it comes the message, "Where does a 500-pound gorilla sleep?" Later, the stock market electronic stock ticker is hijacked, displaying the question, "What's worse than a millipede with flat feet?" Finally, the Department of Motor Vehicles is attacked with its computers displaying the riddle, "How do you fit 5 elephants into a compact car?"
Yeah.
That is just so... you can tell it's the Riddler.
Yeah.
Like, you can just tell. However, the key thing to note here is not only the riddles are goofy as all hell under the, you know, the start of the show.
Yeah.
I love the Riddler.
Yes. But,
and his appearances are no less than epic every time he shows up. But this is actually quite interesting because you get Batman and Commissioner Gordon deducing the Riddler's behind all this, and they discover that Edward Nygma's record is erased from all public records from existence.
Yeah.
it's quite funny to see that. I love also the fact that, you know, Gordon gets hijacked into this machine.
Where did these riddles come from? I've never heard of these riddles.
I've never heard them either.
I wonder if they're actually real. At least the answers for two of them are so fucking stupid. You know,
where does a 500-pound gorilla sleep? Answer: anywhere it wants. What's worse?
Like, how do you get five elephants into a compact car? Two in the front seat, two in the back, and one in the trunk.
I mean, that I can see, because it is kind of punny, because it's elephants. I mean, that is the only one out of the three that I can kind of forgive, but what's worse than a millipede with flat feet? A giraffe with a sore throat? That, I don't know. Maybe I'm not using my brain right now, but that, to me, makes no fucking sense.
I don't know. But I do have to say that I do like this episode, and it's funny because Marty Eisenberg and Robert Skuer wrote this. So that would explain why I like this episode from the get-go.
Yeah. No, the episode itself, I have no issues with the episode itself.
No, the riddles are out there.
Great. What I take issue with is two of these riddles, because they make no fucking sense to me. But no, the episode is absolutely great. And, you know, seeing Batman in virtual reality, that's just awesome.
Well, seeing, you know, all of them in virtual reality was cool. Yeah. And then I liked seeing the Riddler in there, too. Because he's all red yeah. and black. It was just, I love this episode. I love that everything is so crisscrossed, mixed up. You know, and then, of course, Riddler warns them not to unplug the commissioner. Because it would basically, because Gordon's so intertwined into this, it would make Gordon that his body will react as if it's truly happening, meaning that the commissioner is in danger of cardiac arrest. Moreover, simply shutting off the program would be like hitting a brick wall at 400 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Batman has to go inside the machine. And I think it's hilarious how Batman takes him down. I love the chessboard.
Yeah, that was so awesome.
The virtual chessboard was hilarious.
And it's used in the Super Nintendo game as well.
Yeah, I haven't played that, unfortunately. But yeah, I love how the whole thing played out. I love the Pegasus thing showing up and, you know, the constellations and... the most interesting part is the Riddler getting trapped inside his own virtual reality program.
Yeah.
Basically fried in there. Yeah. But I of course I liked it when they, you know, duplicated Riddler and Batman in the world.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. But yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things where it was just a really, really awesome thing, and it was an awesome episode. It was a nice Riddler story, and we don't know. Of course, we do know, obviously, that he gets out later. But at this, you know, watching this on TV back in the day, or even watching it back now, you don't know. I mean, unless
you think he's just trapped there forever.
Yeah, essentially, yes. As much as I don't mind the godlike version of Riddler in Batman Forever. At the end, I think this ending was so much better, at least for this episode versus movie.
it's definitely, you know.
Yeah.
I this is one of my favorite episodes of the series as well. I mean, I have so many favorites, and they don't all include the Joker, but...
Majority of them do, don't lie.
Majority of them do, I won't deny that. But there's so many other good episodes. Almost got them, you've got this one, you've got, you know, If You're So Smart, Why Aren't You Rich? You know, there's just so many other good ones in this series that it's just... It's hard to sit there and pick.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'd have to say I love this episode with a passion. This is one of my favorites that I loved watching, even on reruns back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
The trivia bits are the Baxter's Box is a clear homage to the Rubik's Cube.
I could never solve one of those damn things. I tried and tried and tried as a kid. I could never get those damn things.
My brother cheated. He took off all the stickers and put them on the right spot.
Hey, you're not supposed to do that.
I was like, bullshit. So I don't really see any others. I mean, we pretty much already covered the other trivia, so anything else?
That's it for this one.
All right, we'll be moving on to the last episode of the night.
Master Bruce, are you all right, sir?
I'm tired, Alfred.
Well, I shouldn't wonder. You've taken no meals today. I can't recall when you last slept.
A weary body can be dealt with, but a weary spirit, that's something else. Sometimes, old friend, I wonder if I'm really doing any good out there.
How can you doubt it? The lives you've saved, the criminals you've brought to justice?
I've put out a few fires, yes. Won a few battles. But the war goes on, Alfred. On and on. You have it, Alfred?
Of course, sir.
And finally, we have I Am the Knight. On the anniversary of the death of Bruce's parents, Batman sadly sits in the Batcave. Alfred asks if he is okay, and Batman claims that he is tired. Alfred points out that Batman hasn't eaten or slept for a while, but Batman says the problem isn't his body, but his spirit. He checks the newspaper and discovers that the Penguin's conviction was overturned due to a technicality. Seeing this only makes Batman wonder if he's really doing any good. Alfred assures him that he is, but Batman claims that in spite of what he's done, the war against crime continues. Alfred gives Batman a package and sadly watches as his boss leaves.
When I watch this back, I have no memory of this episode. I watched it in preparation for this, but I didn't remember it whatsoever.
I do, to some extent, but I didn't remember all of it.
Yeah. I don't know what to think about this one, because I thought we already had, like, Appointment in Crime Alley, where he had moments in that with Leslie Tompkins, and I thought we dealt with this already. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess if it's the anniversary of their death, you know, hey, that's, you know, obviously they have to write the story about it, but I just didn't, I don't know, this one just didn't connect with me whatsoever.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, it's not a bad episode, it just,
I mean, I can kind of agree. I mean, it wasn't one of my favorites. Could I watch it again? Yes, more than likely.
Yeah.
It's not one that I would say that I absolutely love, though. It does show a very dark part of his, you know, what's going through his mind, his soul, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it also shows him kind of still mourning about his parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even Dick can't cheer him up. But I'm bump.
Sorry.
Oh. So dirty.
Yeah. Legends of the Dark Knight, Episode 10, the dirtiest we've ever gotten.
Oh, God.
I don't know where to go from there. But. Yeah, then you know, you've got the bust of for Jimmy the Jazzman Peak, and you know, Batman's supposed to be there so that they can do their sting operation, and of course he wasn't.
Yeah.
Because he was still being kind of a, you know, selfish for himself for a little bit. And yeah, so it ends up causing Commissioner Gordon to get shot.
Yeah.
And then Batman, of course, feels horrible, and Barbara Gordon comes up and tells him, no, it's not your fault, and he says, I should have been there, it's, you know, it's my fault, and compares him to his father because he's the same age, and, you know, it's just kind of showing how much admiration he has for him.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the first appearance of Barbara since Heart of Steel. This is the last appearance of Judge Vargas. Last time we saw her was in Strange Secret of Bruce Wayne. What I'm surprised in the trivia and everything else that they don't... They mentioned Seth Green, who voiced Wizard and would later go on to play another youth caught up in criminal world, Scott Evil, obviously, from Austin Powers. But... they don't make mention of the fact that Seth returns in Batman Beyond as the voice of Nelson Nash, who is the bully at the high school. Which is kind of weird to me that they don't even mention that in this as far as, like, Seth's future appearances in the DCAU.
Yeah, I can kind of see that, too. That is kind of weird.
Yeah. Hmm.
What is it? I don't really have too much on this episode. I mean, I do like some of the background that's being told in more background into Batman's life and, you know, story, and then his thoughts on certain people and, you know, just wondering if he's doing any good. I like that sense into his, you know, thought process.
Yeah.
But... yeah. Other than that, I mean, it's not a bad episode, but
no, it's not a bad episode at all. And it's still Melissa Gilbert as Barbara, so there is that. It's not that I dislike her voicing of Barbara. I just think that Tara Strong did it a little bit better.
I definitely like Tara's portrayal better.
Yeah,
but. To each their own, I guess. So
yes, to each their own.
The only quote I'm going to even bother mentioning is the one between Gordon and Batman.
Where
Gordon says, got to keep fighting, never stop. What I try to live by, maybe if I'd been younger, I could have been like you. Always wanted to be a hero. And then Batman says, you are a hero, Jim.
Yeah.
And so then it helps give Batman renewed spirit, and he kind of goes off and...
Yeah. Well, you know, with this whole, and I'm going to kind of go off on a tangent here, but with this whole, you know, Dark Knight from 2008 and Dark Knight Rises coming out this year, and the whole plot line of Gordon in Batman Year One, which was the DC Universe movie, I wish that we would get, I mean, I know Commissioner Gordon is not, James Gordon is not, but he's not Bruce Wayne Batman, he's not a mainstay upfront, you know, show-carrying character. But I wish that they would find some way to tell
the story of how Commissioner Gordon became Commissioner Gordon in animation, as far as like all the stuff that happened to him in Chicago to make him get to Gotham City. You know, Commissioner Gordon in this is always, you know, was always great, and obviously at this point he's established. And of course, I mean, you're going to have those episodes where if something happens to, you know, I would say Batman, more so obviously Batman than Bruce, but Batman tolerates Harvey Bullock. There's a few episodes where he kind of likes him, even though Harvey hardly ever likes Batman in return. But, I mean, Gordon essentially is Batman's best friend.
Yeah.
At least in this series, to a certain extent, he could be. I mean, because, you know, running around, you know, in tights with a bunch of young male sidekicks is not exactly, you know, the greatest of lifestyles. And Alfred's known the guy since he was in diapers. So, I mean, that's more of a father figure for him. So I would say Gordon, at least in BTAS, could almost be Batman's best friend.
Oh, I could definitely agree with you there. That's the hands down. I could see that. But again, he's almost like a father figure to him.
As well, yeah. I mean, I will agree with that. But it's more so like 50-50 in Gordon's case, whereas Alfred is more so his father rather than a best friend to him. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
So, with that, we'll be back after this commercial break with our final thoughts.
Behold, Tooncast Beyond. What better way to follow up the GCRN's most popular podcast than to take it beyond? If you listen to Tooncast Classic, Toon Beyond takes it to the next level. We are covering cartoons in seasons. Join TFG and Mike, Steve Megatron, and a bunch of other hosts as we cover all kinds of cartoons from 2000 to whenever now is. You can find Tooncast Beyond in iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Tune in.
You can now hear the Geekcast Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today using promo code GeekCastRadio at Stitcher.com/GeekCastRadio or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio. The smarter way to listen to radio.
Grab your helmets because it's time to assemble Mask. Coming April 10th, 2012, the Geekcast Radio Network launches Masked Mayhem with your hosts Optimus Solo and TFG and Mike. This podcast covering all 75 episodes of Mask will feature in-depth analysis of every episode, talk on the toys, and more. Masked Mayhem will run 30 podcast episodes. You can find us in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Get your spectrums ready, as podcasting is the ultimate weapon.
Soundwave, jam that transmission!
Rumble Frenzy, Ravage Rat Bat, Eject, Operation Interference.
No, there will be no Operation Interference. I am TFG1 Mike, and you should be listening to my very first podcast, the TFG1 Podcast. 24 episodes covering the entire U.S. run of the 1984 Transformers cartoon. I also have a few supplemental episodes and an interview with Stan Bush. I bring in guest hosts who will be full-time co-hosts in Steve Megatron and fan of the show, now co-host Pecan Court Michael. So check out the TFG1 Podcast. You can find it on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Transform and roll out!
And by golly, speaking of aces, looky here.
I can't believe his luck.
Oh, darn.
Let me see those cards. Now, no sore losers.
Hey, I don't get it. You just knocked out Catwoman and left her?
Oh, come on, Crockers. Didn't I say there's more than one way to get someone? Even as I speak, Catwoman is being trussed up at the Pussykins Pet Food Factory. First thing tomorrow, I'm sending a lovely case of cat food to Batman.
I don't think so.
Was it something I said? Well, well, an imposter in our midst.
Risking everything for your kitty, Batman?
You're not getting out of this one.
Maybe. But I'm not bad with traps myself. Wait up.
Back off, bats, or say chow to your girlfriend. Cat chow, that is. That's a good little rodent, and just to make sure you don't follow me. Batman, what you gonna do? Kick me around and save your kitten? You've only got time for one. Good call. Help!
Thanks for coming after me.
I owed you.
Well, I'd like to think our relationship isn't just restricted to saving each other from freaks and weirdos. And that maybe we'd have a place for each other without Gotham. Without the freaks. Maybe without masks.
Maybe.
Almost got him.
Welcome back. And so, yes, we will get into our final decision of the night. What were your favorite episodes in order?
I'm going to go worst to first, or worst to best.
Okay.
It's
a tie almost for that end one.
I'm gonna put Terror in the Sky worst. When I watched it back, I was like, and I haven't seen that episode in years. I mean, it's at least been 3 years, four years since I've seen that episode when I originally had the DVD set when I watched did a watch through the DVD set. So it's been 4 years, and even before then, it's been a number of years since I saw Terror in the Sky. So for me, when I watched it back, I was like, oh god, this is so fucking predictable. So yeah, Terror in the Sky is the worst. Birds of a Feather, only because it essentially turned Penguin into the villain of the week because he was used by the rich people. I Am the Night comes third because it does give to a lot of Bruce's psyche and background, and I like that, but I was just kind of lost watching the episode. Like, I just didn't get it. And then What is Reality is second best, and then obviously the best episode of the night is Almost Got Him.
Yeah, I could definitely see some of those.
What about you? What's your choices?
My choices would almost be on par with yours. Terror in the Sky would definitely be my bottom of the list, number five. Then, of course, I'm thinking Birds of a Feather would be four. I Am the Night is three. What is Reality is two. And Almost Got Him is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, yes, Almost Got Him and What is Reality are the best two of the night.
Yeah.
So, any other comments?
Nope, I think that's it.
Alrighty. Thank you for joining us for Legends of the Dark Knight. If you'd like to leave feedback on the show, there are many ways to do so. First, you can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. Second, you can rate our show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. You can call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. Become a fan of us on Facebook by searching Geekcast Radio Network. You can follow us on Twitter at LOT Dark Knight. My Twitter name is at SCP21. What is your Twitter name?
TFG and Mike.
There's also a new GCRN email account that you can email us and send your feedback, questions, comments, or whatever. If you'd like to leave feedback in that way, the address for that is feedback@geekcastradio.com. Join us next time when we discuss Off Balance, The Man Who Killed Batman, Mudslide, Paging the Crime Doctor, and Zatanna. So for now, I'm Steve Megatron Phillips with
TFG and Mike,
saying in the immortal words of Batman, I am vengeance, I am the night, I am Batman. Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Technical difficulties. Let's move on, shall we?